This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello, and welcome to this special bonus episode of Fallacious Trump, which is just me fact-checking the State of the Union, because I figured you probably, if you've got any sense, probably not going to watch it yourselves. I don't have any sense, and so I did. I figured that Trump probably wouldn't tell the truth based on everything he's ever done, but also based on the fact that the real State of the Union is absolutely fucked, and I thought he probably was more likely to go with everything's great and it's all because of me. Turns out that's pretty much what he did. But I thought there's quite a few fact checks on the internet of the State of the Union, because obviously I think other people might have been expecting him to lie a bit. But they tend to be quite focused on just a few of the things that he lied about. Obviously, it was the longest State of the Union in history, which might have been so that Don Jr. could win some money on a betting platform that he now runs called Kelsey, or that he's a partner in. But that's unconfirmed. I don't want to suggest that that's definitely true. But, I mean, would we be surprised if Trump specifically made sure it was extra long so that his family could grift a bit? I wouldn't put it past him, but I'm not going to say it's definitely true. Anyway, I'm going to go through and play some clips and then tell you the truth about what actually is the story behind the lies that he's telling. As you'll have noticed, Mark isn't here with me this episode. He's not back on his usual recording schedule yet, so it's just me. And possibly that means I won't go off on quite as many tangents, so I'm going to try and rattle through this. I'm going to try and get this done, even though it was a very long speech and there were a lot of lies. I'm going to try and go through this as efficient as possible. We're not going to kind of hang about and go over and over stuff, even though he did repeat himself a lot of times. Although he pretty much stayed, I think, to the teleprompter. He went off a few times. He talked quite a lot about what awful people the Democrats were, and I think only some of that was written down in the actual speech. But most of the time he starts the teleprompter, but obviously the teleprompter is full of lies as well, because that's the whole job of the White House. So we're going to start off with a clip from very early on in the speech where he's talking about the situation he was given when he came into power.
When I last spoke in this chamber 12 months ago, I had just inherited a nation in crisis with a stagnant economy, inflation at record levels, a wide open border, horrendous recruitment for military and police, rampant crime at home, and wars and chaos all over the world.
So the U.S. economy was far from stagnant in January 2025. The U.S. gross domestic product rose 2.8% in 2024 after adjusting for inflation. That, along with every other year in Biden's presidency, was a stronger growth rate than the 2.2% achieved last year during the start of Trump's second term. It was the economy was in a better place at that point than it is now. Inflation was 3% in January 2025, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, well above what they aim for, the 2%, but saying that it was record levels is absolutely not true. Historical levels: in 1920, it was 23.7%. In 1980, it was 14.8%. Even in 2022, during its peak during Biden's presidency, it was 9.1%. So nowhere near record levels. As for rampant crime, the US violent crime rate in 2024 was the lowest since 1969, and the property crime rate was the lowest since 1961. Murder in the US fell at the fastest rate ever recorded in both 2023 and 2024, and was down 25% from 2020 levels because it spiked during COVID. So, no, not rampant crime, not inflation at record levels, not a stagnant economy. The border was never wide open. It's just none of that is true.
Inflation is plummeting. Incomes are rising fast. The roaring economy is roaring like never before.
Inflation is not plummeting. It is currently 2.39%, up from 2.38% last March, which is down from where it was in January 2025, but it's been static for almost exactly a year now. As for incomes rising fast, after-tax incomes adjusted for inflation rose just 0.9% in 2025, down from 2.2% in 2024, Biden's last year in office.
But we will always allow people to come in legally, people that will love our country and will work hard to maintain our country.
He obviously, at this point, was talking mostly about illegal immigration and saying that we'll allow people to come in legally. That's not something he's stopping. But that's not true. He suspended the refugee program on his first day in office and resumed the program in October for white South Africans only. He's also placed restrictions on who can travel or emigrate to the US from nearly 40 countries around the world. Most of those are in Africa. He's not allowing many people, or all the people who would have been able to otherwise, come in legally into the U.S.
Gasoline, which reached a peak of over $6 a gallon in some states, under my predecessor, it was quite honestly a disaster, is now below $2.30 a gallon in most states, and in some places, $1.99 a gallon.
He's doing quite a significant amount of cherry picking here to suggest that it's below $2.30 a gallon in most states and in some places $1.99 a gallon. Basically, he's using individual gas stations to make that argument to the extent that it's true in any way. Normally, when you do, you know, if he was comparing that fairly with Biden's prices, he would compare it to the absolute lowest price you could get gasoline at. But he's not doing that. He's comparing the highest price or the average price at the time in California, which did reach over $6 a gallon at one point. But if you look at the average prices, there is nowhere in the US that it is below $2.30 a gallon. It's $2, or at the time of the speech, it was $2.37 a gallon at average in Oklahoma. That's the state with the lowest average price. The national average is $2.95. And as for stations where it's $1.99 a gallon, the website Gas Buddy could only find four stations out of 150,000-ish that they actually check where it was below $2 a gallon. So four stations out in the whole of the US isn't really something that you can claim is a good kind of success for your attempt to reduce the price of gasoline. Not that presidents have much control over that kind of thing. It's mostly driven by crude oil prices, supply and demand, and local price competition, which is where you get those low prices, is where you've usually got a kind of a cluster of petrol stations that are trying to outdo each other, sometimes even selling at a loss to get people in and kind of get them used to being customers of those stations. Incidentally, just for context, US listeners might be interested to know that currently the national average in the UK is the equivalent of about $6.66 a gallon. And that's not especially high. Last year, it was over $9 a gallon. I can get, there's a station near me where I can get it for the equivalent of about $6.20 a gallon. And I'm like really happy about that. So while you're complaining about your high gas prices, think yourself fucking lucky.
Mortgage rates are the lowest in 4 years and falling fast. And the annual cost of a typical new mortgage is down almost $5,000 just since I took office. 1 year. And low interest rates will solve the Biden-created housing problem.
In January 2025, when Trump was sworn in, the monthly median mortgage payment was $2,205. So that's an annual payment of $26,460. In December 2025... the monthly median payment was $2,025, which is $24,300 a year. So that's a difference not of $5,000, like Trump claims, but of $2,160 a year. So that is a drop, but it's less than half of what he's claiming. Mortgage rates were lower than they are now in September 2022, so that's less than 4 years ago. He's claiming it's the lowest currently in 4 years. And he also claimed that low interest rates would solve the Biden-created housing problem. Lower mortgage rates won't fix the fact that house prices have risen by 37% since 2020, which was not due to Biden, but due to a shortage of available housing by up to 7 million homes in the US, which began long before Biden was president. Also, according to the National Association of Home Builders, Trump's tariffs will add an average of $10,900 onto the cost of a new home. So that'll take that price increase up to 40% since 2020.
In 4 long years, the last administration got less than $1 trillion in new investment in the United States. And when I say less, substantially less. In 12 months, I secured commitments for more than $18 trillion pouring in from all over the globe.
He so fucking didn't. The White House's own website says that the figure for major investment announcements during Trump's term is $9.7 trillion. And that's also a massive lie. The various people have looked at this. CNN did a detailed review of it in October. Forbes have looked at it. Bloomberg have looked at it. That $9.7 trillion counts all kinds of things that aren't investments, like arrangements or agreements, not even kind of signed agreements, but like pledges about bilateral trade. So that's trade going in both directions, not investment. Economic exchange, vague statements that don't rise to the level of pledges even. The Bloomberg analysis says that $2.6 trillion of it isn't investment at all. It's just routine business expenses like worker training that companies, if you look at the White House page on this, it lists loads and loads of US companies and how much they're expecting to spend. Some of those are investment in terms of they are expanding or building new facilities or whatever. But a lot of it's just expenses that they would have anyway, training their workers and spending money that is going into the US economy, but was always going to go into the US economy because that's how businesses work. So it isn't stuff that Trump has arranged, and it isn't stuff that wouldn't have happened if he hadn't been there. The wording on the White House website is something like deals and investments that have been made possible by Trump's presidency, which that's not even true. There are commitments on there or pledges on there that are just kind of generally suggestions that other countries will buy stuff from the US, and those can be military equipment like Saudi Arabia, which they already were going to buy. India's promise to stop buying Russian oil and start buying US liquid natural gas is on there, but for practical reasons, basically, because those aren't the same thing, oil and natural gas. Liquid natural gas, for practical reasons and also geopolitical reasons, there's every reason to believe that'll never happen. The EU's purchase promises of $600 billion that are listed on the White House's website that just basically can't happen because government officials in the EU don't have the authority to control the purchasing decisions of private companies. And, I mean, this is prior to the various issues with tariffs causing problems with those trade deals. But the EU, if they ever said to him, oh, yeah, we reckon we can get people to spend this amount on US stuff, that has no teeth whatsoever. There's no way that those officials can affect what individual private companies do.
We have added 70,000 new construction jobs in just a very short period of time.
So from January 2025 to January 2026, 44,000 construction jobs were added, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is quite a lot less than 70,000.
Nobody can believe what they're watching.
Okay, that one's true.
American oil production is up by more than 600,000 barrels a day.
Actually, it's 334,600, according to the most up-to-date estimate from the U.S. Energy Information Administration, so about half of what he claimed.
More Americans are working today than at any time in the history of our country.
Yes, that's technically true. But there are more Americans today than at any time in the history of the country, because the population is continually growing. And as the population grows, so does the number of Americans who are working. The relevant figure is the proportion of Americans who have jobs, which has fallen significantly in the last 25 years-ish, partly because the workforce is aging and more people are retired. But the proportion of Americans with jobs went from 60.1% in January 2025, the month that Trump was sworn in, to 59.8% in January 2026. So it's down a little bit. The unemployment rate is 4.3%, which is pretty low, but it was lower when Biden left office in January 2025 at 4%. During Biden's presidency, the unemployment rate fell to a 50-year low of 3.4%. So it's true to say there are more Americans working, but there are also more unemployed Americans than there were, and the proportion has gone down a bit of the number of Americans who are in the workforce.
We ended DEI in America.
Well, he issued an executive order eliminating it in the federal government and banning federal contractors from implementing DEI training. But that doesn't affect state governments, private companies, universities, nonprofits that choose to maintain those initiatives. And some companies that have decided to continue with their DEI initiatives are doing better than other companies that have bent the knee to Trump. Also, on the Friday before Trump made the speech, a federal judge, U.S. District Judge Adam Abelson in Baltimore, granted a preliminary injunction blocking the administration from terminating or changing federal contracts under DEI rules. So if they did, if they deem something to be equity related, he says, this judge says, that they can't actually then terminate those contracts. He said it is likely a constitutional violation against free speech, but it also is overly vague and makes it impossible for people to know what they need to do to bring their contracts or grants into compliance.
In 1 year, we have lifted 2.4 million Americans, a record, off of food stamps.
Kicking people off food stamps isn't the same as lifting them off food stamps. That would be a good thing if you had an economy which meant that people could afford not to be on food stamps. But that 2.4 million is nothing to do with the number of people who are suddenly better off thanks to the Trump economy and therefore no longer need their food stamps. That is the number of Americans who are projected to lose their benefits following the One Big Beautiful Bill. So that's just that he's boasting about cruelty, which is not surprising. He does it all the time, but he's framing it as if he has achieved something which has helped people I think that's what it's supposed to sound like anyway, that has helped people so they no longer need to be on those benefits. But he's just taking those benefits away from people who need them.
Last year, I urged this Congress to begin the mission by passing the largest tax cuts in American history, and our Republican majorities delivered so beautifully. Thank you, Republicans.
They are absolutely not the largest tax cuts in American history. They are, depending on how you calculate it, either the sixth or the seventh. Obama's tax cuts in the American Taxpayer Relief Act of 2012 were fourth largest in history. These are Trump's largest, so they're larger than the ones he did in his first term, which you always said were the largest in history. They were nowhere near, but these are still sixth or seventh at best. Then he talked a bit about the new Trump accounts, which are supposedly tax-free, but they're actually really tax-deferred because you will have to pay some taxes on withdrawal, but supposedly tax-free accounts for savings for children, and they would be seeded with $1,000 of money, potentially from the government, potentially from high-income donors like the Dells. But he is now talking about those accounts.
So with modest additional contributions, these young people's accounts could grow to over $100,000 or more by the time they turn 18. Think of it. How much money is that for somebody that started with nothing? Over $100,000, could be much more than that. To make this investment in our children's future, go to TrumpAccounts.gov. TrumpAccounts.gov. And a lot of people are doing it. It's setting every record in the book. It's popular.
So it doesn't launch until July 4th. So it can't possibly be setting every record in the book for how many people are doing it. Also, the idea that with a modest additional contributions, it could grow to over $100,000 or more by the time they turn 18 is, I mean, you could just make up any number for that, because it's all dependent on how much people are able to additionally contribute. The initial $1,000 seed money would grow to about $6,000 over 18 years based on 10% annual return, which is historically plausible but not guaranteed by any means. To get to $100,000, also based on 10% growth, parents would need to add $175 every month of that 18 years. That's almost $40,000 that they would have to invest to get those accounts up to that amount. Also, that $100,000 that it would then reach would be taxed, or at least part of it would be taxed when you withdraw that money. There's also probably management fees that would take a cut of some of that money, and of course inflation, because in 18 years, $100,000 now would be worth just under $70,000. So they are a good idea. There were at one point similar things in the UK. Similar kinds of things have been suggested by Democrats. It's not a bad idea to give an incentive to invest for children. And especially if you're going to give them some free money to seed that account. That's not a bad idea. It isn't anywhere near likely to increase the amount of money that he is suggesting without basically all of that money coming from the parents, because even if you didn't have that $1,000 seed money, that $175 every month would still reach over $95,000 over that 18 years based on a 10% growth. So the seed money really isn't that important if you're looking at big numbers. If that's all you have and you can't afford to put anything more into it, and it grows at that rate and it gets to $6,000 in 18 years, great, that's nice to have. But it's not going to change anyone's life, and it's not going to be something that parents can do without significant funds going into it, which the vast majority of Americans can't afford to do. If they can afford to invest that kind of money in accounts for their children, there are probably better accounts to do it with. There are, you know, tax similar to IRAs, tax-free kind of accounts. That is something that can be set up. This arguably makes it easier for more Americans. There's various tax forms to fill in that means that some people who would be eligible for it won't end up doing it and getting it. But I mean, it's not a bad idea. It's generally a good thing to do, but it's nowhere near as likely to lead to massive success and large amounts of money as he suggests it is.
And as time goes by, I believe the tariffs paid for by foreign countries will, like in the past, substantially replace the modern day system of income tax.
Oh, tariffs are still not paid by foreign countries. He doesn't. I don't think he knows that. I don't think he understands. Well, he doesn't understand what tariffs are. He thinks that they're paid for by foreign countries. And if anyone has ever tried to explain it to him, it didn't go well. They're not paid by foreign countries. They're paid for by the importers, and those prices, those extra costs, are usually passed on to the consumers. Anyway, they also don't have any possible chance of replacing income tax. Tariffs that have been raised so far, which might have to be paid back based on the recent Supreme Court ruling against them, they accounted for less than 4% of federal revenue last year. Income taxes and payroll taxes that finance Social Security and Medicare account for 84% of federal revenue. That's a massive difference. There's no comparison whatsoever. You can't make a dent in income tax with tariffs. And that it's coming from the same people. That's not a benefit. That's not a better way of doing it. It is a worse way of doing it, because income tax, at least if rich people actually pay it, theoretically at least, it's a progressive tax, which means that people who earn more money pay more tax. But tariffs are a tax, but they're not a progressive tax. Everyone pays the tariffs. If you buy goods that are tariffed and the importers put the costs onto the price of the goods, doesn't matter what your income is, doesn't matter how much money you have, you pay that extra. So they're a significantly less fair, significantly less efficient tax.
Under Biden and his corrupt partners in Congress and beyond, it reached a breaking point with the Green New Scam, open borders for everyone. They poured in by the millions and millions from prisons, from mental institutions. They were murderers, 11,888 murders. They came into our country. You allowed that to happen.
So there's still no proof that millions of people entered the US from prisons and mental institutions. I say no proof. It didn't happen. It's the kind of thing that we would know if it happened. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever of people being turfed out in any way of mental institutions or prisons in other countries and heading to the US. It's not a thing. It's not a thing that happened. He is insane. The 11,888 murderers, nobody knows where that number comes from. Trump loves saying it, but he made it up. The real number is 13,099, but that's also not the real number. That's the number that he's referring to and getting wrong. That comes from a letter from the DHS to a Texas Republican in 2024 about how many non-citizens on the ICE docket had been convicted of a crime. The docket that they hold is split into detained people and non-detained people. And the non-detained number of non-citizens convicted of homicide is 13,099. But here's the thing. That is all of the non-citizens that ICE is aware of, not just the ones that came in under Biden, the ones that have come in over the past four decades or more, including under Trump. The majority of those were convicted in the US, so they weren't murderers when they came in. And non-detained just means that they aren't detained by ICE. It doesn't mean they aren't in local, state, or federal prisons. They're not in immigration detention. And it's not surprising that they're not in immigration detention, because it's only legal to keep people in immigration detention for about 6 months. And if they're convicted of murder in the US, that's not where they would be kept. If they are someone who was convicted of murder and have served their sentence and ICE picks them up and wants to deport them, they might be kept in immigration detention for some time. But if the country that they're from won't accept them back, like some places don't, like Russia, for example, they do eventually have to be released. They can't be kept in ICE detention indefinitely. And so those kinds of cases will be counted amongst that figure, as well as people who are in prison because of crimes they committed. So that 13,099, or what Trump remembers as 11,888, it's not just people who are either murderers, you know, convicted murderers who came into the country and we were like, yeah, fine, whatever, or people who came in and then committed murder and we were like, yeah, fine, whatever. That's not anything like what's happened at all. That's people who aren't currently in the about 6 months you're allowed to be kept in immigration detention while they're trying to deport you.
The cost of chicken, butter, fruit, hotels, automobiles, rent is lower today than when I took office by a lot. And even beef, which was very high, is starting to come down significantly.
So he can't say significantly, but also beef prices keep hitting all-time highs. Ground beef reached a record of $6.75 a pound last month, up nearly 22% from the year before. Butter is down by almost 10%. Hotels are down about 3%, but chicken, fruit and cars are about the same as they were, and rent is up a little. The average cost of groceries increased by 2.4% from 2025.
I'm also ending the wildly inflated cost of prescription drugs like has never happened before. Other presidents tried to do it, but they never could. They tried. Most didn't try, actually. But they tried. They said they tried. They couldn't do it. They didn't even come close.
They did. They did come close. In fact, they did manage to do it. In 2022, Joe Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, which capped insulin at $35 a month for people on Medicare, put a $2,000 annual cap on out-of-pocket drug costs for people on Medicare, and allowed Medicare to negotiate the prices of some of its most expensive medications. Even though the law only capped insulin costs for Medicare patients, drug makers also extended the $35 monthly caps to privately insured patients.
I took prescription drugs, a very big part of healthcare, from the highest price in the entire world to the lowest. That's a big achievement. The result is price differences of 300, 400, 500, 600% and more, all available right now at a new website called TrumpRx.gov.
Obviously, as we've talked about many times, you can't reduce a price by 300, 400, 500, 600%. Because then you would be giving people money to have the drugs. That's just, it's not a thing. If you reduce the price by 100%, it costs nothing. The discounts on TrumpRx.gov are limited to mostly weight loss and fertility drugs, which many Americans have to pay for out of pocket because insurance plans either limit or don't cover those drugs. It does have significant reductions, significantly lower costs for brand name versions of those types of drugs. But other pharmacies and websites sell generic versions of around half of the drugs on Trump's website at lower prices. And also the discounts on TrumpRx.gov are only for cash paying patients, not people using their insurance. Also, the US is absolutely, definitely not now the lowest prescription drug prices in the world on TrumpRx.com or .gov. Overall, Thailand is probably lowest, whereas for brand name drugs in higher income countries, France and Japan are lowest. But there's at least 33 countries where prescription drugs are half the price of even the lowest versions now on TrumpRx.gov.
We will always protect Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Analysts estimate that the One Big Beautiful Bill reduces federal Medicaid spending by $793 billion dollars, leading to around 7.8 million people losing medical coverage. So I disagree that they will always protect Medicaid.
Since I took office, the typical 401k balance is up by at least $30,000. That's a lot of money.
$30,000 is a lot of money, that's true. But Fidelity data shows that the average 401k balance rose $12,000, not $30,000 since Trump took office.
But when it comes to the corruption that is plundering, really, it's plundering America. There's been no more stunning example than Minnesota, where members of the Somali community have pillaged an estimated $19 billion from the American taxpayer. Oh, we have all the information. And in actuality, the number is much higher than that.
This is just a racist lie. There's no evidence at all to back up the president's claims that the Somali community has defrauded taxpayers of $19 billion. The Assistant U.S. Attorney Joe Thompson, in a press conference in December 2025, said that half or more of the $18 billion in federal funds that support a variety of Minnesota social services programs may have been stolen. So that's less than half of the $19 billion. Also, absolutely no reason to assume that that is has been done by the Somali community, because the main group that was prosecuted for that crime, for their fraud, was run by a white American woman. There were some Somali people involved in that conspiracy, basically, in that the conspiracy to commit fraud in that case, because there is a large Somali community in Minnesota. But it is a very tiny fraction of the estimated 100,000 Somali Americans living in Minnesota, most of whom are US citizens. Ridiculous and racist to say that the Somali community is defrauding the American taxpayer. And the numbers, as I say, are way off.
Cheating is rampant in our elections. It's rampant.
No, it isn't. Even conservative think tanks like the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation show that it is incredibly rare. When they are actively looking for evidence of it, they cannot find it. And they keep databases of all of the examples that are even investigated, not even that lead to evidence of non-citizens voting. It happens in extremely isolated cases. There are also cases where people have been identified as non-citizens when actually they were citizens, or that people have died after voting and before they were investigated, or various things like that. But it is less than a thousandth of a percent of the number of votes cast. You know, we're talking about hundreds of millions of votes cast over the course of several elections, and in kind of single or double digits of potentially real cases of voter fraud.
And even the new communist mayor of New York City, I think he's a nice guy, actually. Speak to him a lot. Bad policy, but nice guy. Just said they want people to shovel snow. They got hit hard. Wants them to shovel snow, but if you apply for that job, you need to show two original forms of ID and a Social Security card. Yet they don't want identification for the greatest privilege of them all, voting in America. No, it's no good.
So the requirement to get forms of ID and a Social Security card to apply for the job of snow shoveling in New York City is a federal I-9 employment law requirement. So they need to confirm your eligibility to work in the US. That's not something that Mamdani, who is incidentally not a communist, can choose or bypass or anything like that. It's a federal requirement. The forms of ID that you can use to do that wouldn't necessarily satisfy the SAVE Act, which is what Trump is talking about here. And also, and quite crucially, voting is not the greatest privilege, because it's not a privilege, it's a constitutional right. Working in the US isn't a constitutional right. Many people don't work. They don't, therefore, need to have those forms of ID. they should still be allowed to vote. And the requirements of the SAVE Act put enormous additional onus on especially women, given that marriage certificates aren't necessarily a thing that is enough to prove your change of name if you changed your name and took your husband's name when you got married. So there are significant additional burdens on citizens to vote, which there shouldn't be because it's a constitutional right. And to the extent that it then costs people money to get those forms of ID, even if they can, if they can take the time off work to go back to where they were born to get their birth certificate or whatever it takes to do that, or to pay for a passport, that's a poll tax because it's requiring people to essentially pay money to be able to vote, which is, again, unconstitutional.
I'm very proud to say that during my time in office, both the first 4 years and in particular this last year, there has been a tremendous renewal in religion, faith, Christianity, and belief in God.
No, there hasn't. It is kind of leveling off because the number of Americans identifying as Christian has been declining for years. It went from 78% of Americans in 2007 to 62% now. But it's been about the same. It's been around 63%, 62% for the last 6-7 years. So, yeah, not a tremendous renewal in religion, faith, and Christianity and belief. Just a reduction in the rate of loss of Christians. Then he talked about the murder of Irina Zarutska, the woman who was stabbed on a train or a subway train, and he made it racist.
She had escaped a brutal war only to be slain by a hardened criminal, set free to kill in America, came in through open borders.
DeCarlos Brown Jr., the man who was arrested and charged with killing Irina Zarutska, is not an immigrant. He did not come in through open borders. He was born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina.
My first 10 months, I ended 8 wars, including Cambodia, Thailand, Pakistan, and India. Would have been a nuclear war. 35 million people said the prime minister of Pakistan would have died if it were not for my involvement. Kosovo and Serbia, Israel and Iran, Egypt and Ethiopia, Armenia and Azerbaijan, the Congo and Rwanda, and of course the war in Gaza, which proceeds at a very low level. It's just about there.
I mean, well, let's go through them in order. Cambodia, Thailand. So there's a border dispute that's been going on for quite a long time, over a century, and Trump did preside over the signing of a ceasefire deal between those two sides in October. The ceasefire broke down just a few weeks later. Fighting erupted again in December, forcing 500,000 people to flee their homes. A new ceasefire was reached at the end of December, but Trump didn't have anything to do with that one. So, no, he didn't end that. India-Pakistan. A ceasefire was announced on the 10th of May after 4 days of fighting. Didn't address a lot of the issues that have divided India-Pakistan. It couldn't. There's a lot of issues. India disputed that Trump had anything to do with the truce and said that trade was a factor and communication from Pakistan. Yes, the Prime Minister of Pakistan did praise Trump's involvement. India claimed that he wasn't involved in it. There's been a little bit of confusion in some of the fact checks that I've looked at, because his wording, he said Pakistan and India would have been a nuclear war. 35 million people said the Prime Minister of Pakistan would have died. Some people, for some reason, have taken that to mean that that 35 million people believed that if not for Trump's involvement, the Prime Minister of Pakistan would have died. That's not what he meant. It's awkwardly worded and his delivery is shit, but he, I think, quite clearly meant that the Prime Minister of Pakistan said 35 million people would have died if not for Trump's involvement. I have no reason to believe that's true, either that it would have gone nuclear if Trump hadn't gone involved, or that the Prime Minister of Pakistan ever said that, but that's what I think he meant by that. Anyway, moving on to the next war he ended, Kosovo and Serbia. That wasn't a war. It was a border dispute. No peace deal has been signed. Kosovo's president said in July that Trump's involvement had prevented further escalation in the region, but the Serbian president denied that any escalation had been looming. So that's absolutely the best. Like, one side said, oh yeah, I think he stopped it getting any worse, but there was no particular reason to believe it was getting any worse, and it certainly isn't fixed. They still dispute that territory, and they haven't signed a peace deal. Israel and Iran. Yeah, great fucking job there. This speech was, what, like 5 days before he fucking bombed Iran again? On Israel, like with Israel, on Israel's behalf, starting a new war, essentially. Egypt and Ethiopia, again, not a war. It was a dispute over a dam and it isn't solved. Armenia and Azerbaijan, arguably, is a thing. Like, both of the leaders agree that they are working towards peace, and Trump was involved in part of that. He brought the leaders together in August of 2025. They signed a joint declaration pledging to seek peaceful relations. They have not brokered a peace deal. It's maybe better than it was. It's not fixed. Rwanda and Congo, they signed a US brokered peace agreement in June under pressure from Trump. The peace agreement that they signed has not been implemented, and fighting has continued in the region. So that's not fixed either. He was involved in efforts to broker a ceasefire in Gaza, but that ceasefire, I mean, fragile doesn't even begin to describe it. Israel has continued to kill Palestinian civilians and carry out airstrikes since the, in inverted commas, truce was announced in October. So, yeah, Trump's claim that the war proceeds at a very low level, that's disingenuous at best and a lie.
In a breakthrough operation last June, the United States military obliterated Iran's nuclear weapons program with an attack on Iranian soil known as Operation Midnight Hammer.
It's really weird that if it was obliterated just last June, Steve Witkoff went on the TV just a few days before this, I think like 3 days before this speech, and said that Iran is less than a week away from having a nuclear weapon. I mean, that was also a lie, but their closeness to having nuclear capabilities that they could use to attack the US are part of Trump's justification. I don't think it rises to the level of justification. Excuse for the war that he's just started. It's lies all the way down.
They want to make a deal, but we haven't heard those secret words. We will never have a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, so this is, he's still talking about Iran and the negotiations that were going on. He's claiming that they haven't heard those words. They haven't said that they won't have a nuclear weapon. Just that day, hours before the State of the Union, Iran's foreign minister posted on social media, "Our fundamental convictions are crystal clear. Iran will under no circumstances ever develop a nuclear weapon." Maybe he didn't see that. That's the same day he was maybe getting ready for his speech. You know how Trump likes to be prepared. He was probably, you know, practicing it in front of the mirror. Maybe it's not reasonable to assume that he should have seen that, or that any of his staff of, you know, international diplomats would have any clue what Iran's foreign minister was saying. But in September 2025, in a speech to the United Nations, which you would think might have reached them, the Iranian president said, "I hereby declare once more before this assembly that Iran has never sought and will never seek to build a nuclear bomb." So you can disbelieve them. That's fine. But you can't say that they haven't said they won't make a nuclear weapon. I mean, you know, not without lying, because it's a lie.
And NATO countries are friends and allies. They are. They're our friends and they're our allies. Have just agreed, at my very strong request, to pay 5% of GDP for military defense rather than the 2%, which they weren't paying. We were paying for almost all of NATO. Now they're paying 5 as opposed to not paying 2.
Like, quite a lot of things wrong with this. They're not paying 5 now. They weren't not paying 2, at least not all of them. Those two numbers aren't the same anyway. The 5% that NATO members have committed to reach by 2035 is for all defence-related and security-related spending. That includes 3.5% of their GDP on the core defence requirements. That is the same as the 2% that was the previous target. So that 2% has gone up to 3.5%. The 5% he's talking about is a different, like a wider figure that covers other things. They are not paying that 3.5% because it's a target for 2035. Several NATO members reached their 2% target by last year. Not everyone. But they're not paying 5%. They're not paying 3.5%. The US isn't even paying 3.5% at the moment because their proportion that they're paying has actually gone down. It's the only country in NATO that has reduced the proportion of their GDP that they are contributing to NATO.
And every service member recently received a warrior dividend of $1,776. You know, they put it on my desk. We got the money from tariffs and other things, a lot of money we have.
Didn't get the money from tariffs. The Defense Department said in a release on in December that the money was from a supplemental housing fund that Congress appropriated as part of Trump's domestic spending bill. So it was already allocated to military housing. That money would have gone to military families who needed housing assistance. That money therefore isn't now available to those people because that money has been spread around each one of the 1.28 million active duty service members.
And with our new military campaign, we have stopped record amounts of drugs coming into our country and virtually stopped it completely coming in by water or sea. You probably noticed that.
Yeah, so he's referring to the airstrikes on boats from Venezuela. Since September, the Trump administration has struck at least 41 boats, killing about 152 people. They haven't provided any evidence at any point that the boats were carrying drugs. There has been a drop in Customs and Border Protection drug seizures since the strikes began. But Customs and Border Protection don't oversee drug seizures on water, especially international waters. That's the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard has not seen a decrease in drug seizures. They've seen an increase in drug seizures. So the White House is citing a drop in Customs and Border Protection drug seizures as a success, as proof that less drugs are coming in. At the same time, the Coast Guard is citing an increase in drug seizures as a success, proving that they are stopping more drugs from coming in. You can't have it both ways. The number that Trump is referring to, which is the amount of drugs actually making it into the country past border protection and the Coast Guard, is an unknowable number. It can only ever be an estimate. One of the guests that was invited to the State of the Union was the helicopter pilot who flew the Delta Force team to abduct Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Trump talked about that operation a bit and specifically the difficulties that helicopter pilot underwent.
While preparing to land, enemy machine guns fired from every angle, and Eric was hit very badly in the leg and hip, one bullet after another. He absorbed 4 agonizing shots, shredding his leg into numerous pieces. And yet, despite the fact that the use of his legs was vital to successful helicopter flight, Legs are the most important part of flying a helicopter to deliver the many commandos who would capture and detain Maduro was the only thing Eric was thinking about. Then, even as he was gushing blood, which was flowing back down the aisle, helicopter lands at a steep angle.
You can hear the bits where he goes off script in that. You know, someone has taken care to write this kind of boy's own adventure of the daring do's of the Delta Force. And he thinks he knows stuff and needs to interject. And the two things that he adds are bullshit. And, like, very obvious bullshit. No, helicopters don't land at a steep angle. Pretty famously, helicopters land vertically. Like, they are able to set down exactly how they sit on the tarmac. That's one of the best things about helicopters. They don't land at a steep angle. If they did, the tail rotor would smash into the tarmac before the rest of the helicopter was down. Also, legs are not the most important part of flying a helicopter. They're a bit of it. They work the rudder and stuff, but hands and arms are pretty fucking important when you're flying a helicopter. The last clip I have, arguably a little bit of a petty fact check, but it was the end of his rousing speech and he got all patriotic.
The revolution that began in 1776 has not ended.
The revolution did not begin in 1776. It began on April 19th, 1775. And it did end. He's being hyperbolic, but it ended on September 3rd, 1783. So, yeah, the end of his speech was also lies. So that's 34 different things that he claimed. I mean, some of those, to be fair, some of those clips that I used had multiple lies in. But that's 34 clips of things he said that weren't true. There were more. Of the rest of the speech that he gave, I think when you add up all the clips I've played, comes to about 8 or 9 minutes. And as I said, it was an hour and 48 minutes. An enormous amount of it was clapping from the Republicans, who stood up and clapped at fucking everything. The Democrats, a lot of the Democrats boycotted it and went to a protest rally instead. They almost didn't stand up at all. I think they stood up for a couple of things, like when the men's Olympic team for ice hockey came in, they stood up and cheered for them. But they understandably didn't stand up for most of the things that Trump said. But the Republicans took every opportunity they possibly could to stand up and clap. And so that was, I don't know, probably half the time. He also told stories about the various guests that they had of people who had, you know, seen action or done whatever. And most of those people, for the most part, he didn't lie about or excessively embellished their stories. And they were just like, you know, sad stories and people who'd gone through hardship. So in some cases, they illustrated stuff that isn't by any means a universal experience. And favoured the kinds of policies that, well, I mean, in all cases, favoured the kinds of policies that Trump does, because otherwise they wouldn't have agreed to be there, like the women's US hockey team, because while the men's hockey team was being fed cold McDonald's by Trump, they instead went to a Michelin-starred restaurant with Stanley Tucci and had a much better time. Basically, it was the kind of shit show you would have expected. Of the amount of time he was talking, some of it was just sentimental tosh about people who had been invited along on the evening. A lot of it was clapping, and the rest of it was lies. So thanks very much. I hope you have got some benefit from that, and it meant that you didn't have to actually watch the whole thing. I wouldn't recommend it. There's no particular benefit to doing that. We will be back soon, hopefully, with our regularly scheduled programming. For patrons, we will have our annual Oscars breakdown coming up very soon. In, I think, probably just over a week or so, that will be out. So if you are at all interested in films and the Oscars, that's something to look out for. I mean, if you're really interested and haven't listened to them already, Our previous annual Oscars breakdowns are in the Patreon feed, in a collection of Oscars specials. You could go back and listen to them if you really want to. If you're kind of, you know, missing fallacious Trump content, they're pretty long. There's a lot of films that are up for Oscars, and we talk about all of them. And we'll be doing that again this year. Mark hasn't seen most of the films. He'll have seen a few of them. I've seen all of them. And so this year, actually, it'll be mostly me telling Mark about them rather than us kind of discussing them. But hopefully it'll still be as entertaining as usual. So we'll see you for that. And hopefully we'll be back with Fallacious Trump in the not too distant future. Bye.